Welcome, everyone, to the Comedy Sports Podcast, starring your host, Christine Rolo Capriolo. And now, the man everyone loves so much, we sent him to Seattle, Dave the Pro Bogan.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Comedy Sports Podcast. Today, we have a guy who started in Milwaukee, then started Seattle, and he's back just for a quick visit. Welcome, Dave Bogan.
Hello.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, thanks for having me. Wow, yeah. When you told me about this, I'm like, so cool.
So fun. Like, I have been having a blast.
Yeah, exploring the history of comedy sports.
Yes, wow. We've talked to a lot of people getting history, and we're going to get into your history.
Okay.
And talk about how you went out and started Seattle with Alex Grindelin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited, but first, I want to know, you were born and raised in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Greendale, specifically. Yeah.
Okay, Greendale.
Class of 87. Greendale Panthers, but I grew up in Greendale, Wisconsin.
Okay,
yeah,
what kind of kid were you?
I was kind of the clowny kind of kid, yeah. I got two older sisters, so what, the youngest sibling is always the one that craves attention or something like that,
maybe.
I don't know.
That's what my older brother would say.
Yeah. But I was always kind of a goofball, especially in seventh and eighth grade, I think that's when I really started getting into like Monty Python. Like Caddyshack and that stuff like that. Yeah, I was a big Monty Python geek, so that's
really?
That was really what I think kind of aligned me into doing comedy and having a passion for it. Yeah,
I didn't know that. Yeah. Who got you into Monty Python?
I'd watch it with my dad.
Okay.
Like on PBS.
Yeah.
Like on Sunday nights.
Yeah.
It would be on him. I would just watch it with my dad. And I think that was my first experience with it. And I was just like, this is hilarious. And what was funny is I'd watch it and I'd be laughing and my dad wouldn't be laughing at all.
He's like, what is this?
I don't know why you're watching it with me, but all right. Okay.
We love the funny walk.
Funny walk.
Yeah, we show it to the kids and they'll make up funny walks. It's hilarious. That's awesome.
God. Yep. The parrot sketch.
Yes, the parrot sketch. I was going to say that's another one.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you loved Monty Python.
Yeah. I did forensics in high school. And,
okay.
One of the things I did in forensics was I did a montage of memorized Monty Python sketches. Yeah. I think I did the parrot sketch and then there was the argument clinic.
Yes, that's a good one too.
Yeah, I just did them. I played all the characters myself.
Really?
Yeah, it was like a 15-minute set of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people were starting to do Monty Python stuff like that at that time too. Yeah, people were playing with those sketches themselves. So I wasn't alone.
So when you were a kid, did you know you wanted to get into something with comedy?
Not at all, really.
No, what did you want to do?
I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like, I remember in high school, you know, when it was getting to be time to think about going to college, at that point, I still didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I was just like, I don't know if I want to even go to college because I don't know what I want to do. So that's why I decided to join the Marines.
Yeah,
instead.
You went into the military.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Was did your dad do the military? Was this in your family? Oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah. My dad was in the Army and the Marines.
Okay.
He was actually a Marine drill instructor at one point.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a life I don't do. I could never. I'd cry and they'd have to kill me. I couldn't do it. That'd be the worst.
No, that doesn't sound like it's a good fit for you.
No.
But I think it was a part of me wanted to join the Marines because one, again, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life.
Yeah.
And I figured, well, this is a great way to, you know, improve myself, you know, with discipline and what have you.
Yeah.
And then the other half was to prove to my dad that I could do it too. Oh. So,
yeah. And you did it. How long were you enlisted?
6 years.
Six years.
6 years active duty.
You were in Desert Storm?
Yeah. Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and then also Operation Restore Hope in Somalia.
Okay.
So I got to enjoy the beautiful place that is Mogadishu.
Tell me your favorite thing about Mogadishu.
Leaving. getting out of there. Yeah. But even in the Marines, I was kind of a clown too.
Really?
Because I was the one that, I'd get into trouble.
Like, really?
Because I'd be kind of like a smart aleck and always have to make some sort of comment about something, and I'd always get punished for it. Like, get on your face, Bogan, do push-ups. You know, just,
that was an extra push-up.
Exactly. All right, okay. I got to quit trying to be funny, I guess. Yeah.
So did your nickname, The Pro, come from the military, or did this come at comedy sports?
It's funny because like a lot of people think, especially like now that I'm in Seattle and they know my experience, they think it's just the name that describes the type of performer I am. I'm the pro.
Oh, you know, okay.
Because I ref so much and like I, you know, I'm the one that, you know, is always like the consummate professional. But that's not where that came from. It actually was when I wasn't a comedy sports Milwaukee player yet.
Okay.
But I'd finished the workshops and, you know, they have the host that walks people to their seats.
Yeah.
And they asked me to host one day. And I was just like, all right. So what I did is I dressed up like a really tacky golfer. And I was just like, and I had a golf club. And I was like, hey, hello. Hey, follow me over here. We got a little dog leg to the left here if you follow me. Be careful when you sit. Don't slice, you know. So I played a golf pro.
And that was it?
And that's where it came from.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I think, I'm not sure who gave it to me. Was it PJ? It may have been. I don't know.
Okay.
One of the voice people
gave
me the name, Dave the Pro Bogan.
Because you dressed up like a golf pro
for hosting. It was just, and that was like, I think the only time I ever hosted too. I only did it once.
It was somehow cosmically aligned that you had to get your nickname.
Yeah, exactly. It was so weird. But yeah, it just stuck, and I've kept it ever since. Yeah.
Okay.
I think initially when I first started playing, I gave myself the nickname Dave Spam Bogan, because again, I was a huge Monty Python fan.
Sure.
So I gave myself the Spam nickname, but then that just went away.
It went away.
Just went away.
Well, so let's back up. What year was it when you got back from active duty?
I got out in 93.
Okay, yeah, and you came back to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I came back to Wisconsin.
And then how did you hear about comedy sports? How does this come across?
When I first moved back, one of the first jobs I got, once I got back to Milwaukee, was I was a bouncer at Luke's Sports Spectacular.
You were a bouncer?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
That was the first job. My sister's friend, John Lucas, who owned the bar, found out I was back, and he knew I was looking for a job. So I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll be a bouncer. That's awesome. But anyways, I was again, just being a goofball a lot. Like, I was cracking up the wait staff all the time, just joking around, stuff like that, being goofy. And one of the waitresses said, oh, my God, you know what? I hear there's, like, a comedy class going on at UWM.
Really?
You should check it out. You're so funny. I'm like, oh, really? And I looked into it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it's comedy sports. Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember seeing that, like, when I was in high school.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. The first match I ever saw was at Cults, like in 85, 86.
Okay.
Something like that. It was like a Sunday matinee or something like that, or a Saturday matinee. It was the first one I saw.
Nice.
And after I saw that, I saw that they also had a high school league.
Yeah.
And so in my junior year, like after I'd seen some comedy sports stuff, I went to the vice principal and I requested to get a comedy sports team started
team
for
at your high school.
Yeah. And they're like, no, can't do it. And what's funny is after I graduated, I then found out they then started
that
a comedy
jerks.
Sport.
I know.
Exactly. So they started a Greendale team after I graduated in 87. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So some lady you're working with as you're bouncing says, hey, you should take this class, and you go down and take workshops.
Yeah.
So or was it at UWM?
It was UWM,
okay.
Like a night course, and was taught by Dick Chudnow.
Okay.
Yeah, and I knew of him too. I'm like, oh wow, that's the guy.
That's the guy.
Yeah. That's the guy. And my 101 class was with Dick Chudnow. And
that's awesome.
That's where I started, and instantly just fell in love with it.
Really?
Yeah, I was just like, wow, everyone here is kind of weird like me. This is great. Finally, a place I belong. I don't have to feel so odd with my quirky sense of humor.
So right away, it hit you.
Mm-hmm.
So after 101 at UW-Milwaukee, did you come over to sports then and play or take more workshops, or did you stay taking them at UWM?
I continued to take workshops. I think they were still at UWM.
Okay.
I think.
Year are we talking?
No, let me see. So that would have been in 90, I think 94.
Okay.
Was my first one. I took a few more at UWM, and then I started taking the classes at Comedy Sports on Jefferson Street.
Yeah.
And, I think I was in workshops for about, like, at least 2 years.
Okay.
Before I got selected to finally start playing.
Okay, and how did that feel? Do you remember playing at the start, your first show?
It's weird. I don't remember, but I do remember my my first match at Comedy Sports.
Yeah.
I was a ref.
You were?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because we were doing like what were they called, the minor league shows,
right?
Like opposite of like the Dead Alewives were doing their shows, and, mm-hmm. And we would be in the other theater doing ours.
Okay.
But because we were like amateurs and we weren't getting paid for it or anything like that, no one wanted to ref our matches.
Okay.
So I was just like, you know what? I'll do it. I've seen enough matches. I can ref this. And that's where I started reffing first.
Yeah.
And Dick saw me.
And he loved you.
And he was just like, hey, you want to ref a matinee sometime? I'm like, yeah. And that's where I started. Yeah, I started as a ref.
Really?
And then started playing.
Well, talk about your ref style. How do you think it's unique or different?
Well, I think, first of all, it just feels comfortable for me.
Okay.
I've always felt like that. I mean, I love playing, but I've always felt more comfortable as the host
because
I like to engage the audience.
Yeah.
So I think a part of it is like my Marine experience.
Yeah.
Because I had to do a lot, you know, like especially once I became like a non-commissioned officer, like I had to train my teams and stuff like that.
Okay.
So I learned how to be in front of people giving commands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of attitude just kind of fits me well. And it's translated into like how I ref. You know, it gave me the confidence I needed to be like a really strong, confident, comfortable ref. And I think if there's anything different about how I ref, I think it's just... like I said, I just feel at ease in that position.
I agree with that. You've always been a very comfortable ref. As you say that, I'm like, totally. That's...
Yeah. And I think, and I think when I ref, people kind of, they respond to that very well.
Yeah.
Especially like, you know, just the way I call games and explain things very simply and easily. And, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm not trying to be funny, but when the funny moments happen, I just let them happen. So I think people feel very comfortable watching me as a ref, and that my attitude is kind of contagious. Like they see how excited I am about doing stuff, but I'm also very precise and very, you know, specific about how I explain things and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
well, you always danced too. I have a memory of you doing the sprinkler. I'd love for you to do it now, but I guess it wouldn't translate.
I've brought that to Seattle too. I'll do the sprinkler. I'll do little, like they play that song Bye Bye Bye.
Yes. Who is that? Some boys group.
Mm-hmm, yep. And I'll do my little dance and end with the sprinkler.
He's doing it.
I'm doing it right now. And audiences love that for some reason. To this day, I don't know why people are like so amazed by that.
It's
such a stupid dance, and people like sometimes are like, they start clapping for me and stuff. I'm like, really? All right. I guess I'm keeping the bit. So yeah, I still do that in Seattle now too. So I brought that out there.
Well, you said the bit. I want to talk about one of your bits, I guess we could call it.
Yeah.
In 185.
Yeah.
You started telling the jokes in 185 as a character.
Tell me
about that, and then we're going to try it. I want to hear it. Tell me about that.
You know, I remember early on when I was a newer player.
Yeah.
And I remember playing 185, and I hated that game.
I did too.
Because I just...
I can't think of it.
I didn't have difficulty coming up with puns. I just had a really hard time with the delivery.
Yeah.
I would deliver the pun, but I wouldn't do it in a way that landed neat.
Right.
And like the audience would like never like respond to it.
Yeah.
And then I remember we were doing a show, and whoever the captain was picked 185, and I'm like, oh, God, I hate this game. But my attitude was like, you know what? I'm just gonna go out there and just do it at 110%.
Yeah.
Just because I don't care anymore. I'm like, all right, let's play this crummy game again. And then, like, I can't remember what the joke was, but I just delivered it like the character you're talking about, where I'm just like, 180. I don't want to yell too loud into the microphone, but yeah, I'm just like 185. Blah, walk into a bar, and I just did it like ridiculously over the top.
Right.
And whatever the punchline was, the audience lost it, and I got a standing ovation.
Yes.
Yeah. That was the first time I did that kind of like obnoxious kind of 185.
Is that character. How you describe a character, obnoxious?
To me, it's obnoxious.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't do it so much anymore.
No?
No, no. But,
can we do one? Kyle will let us know if it'll blow the mic out. Maybe you have to back up a little.
Maybe I should back up, yeah. Let's see.
Like 185 belts.
Belts.
Sure.
All right. 185 belts. Walk into a bar. Bartender says, I'm sorry. We're closed. We can't serve you. And 185 belts go, well, that's a little loopy. And the key is to make the vein pop in the front of my forehead.
I wish our listeners could see your vein and how red your face is.
Yeah, that's what happens. Is like my whole head gets red and the vein pops. And I guess it's the combination of the voice and the visual that connects.
Well, it works. I remember it. I totally remember it.
Exactly.
So you started playing regularly then in Milwaukee for quite a while, reffing and playing.
Yeah, yeah. I played almost 20 years in Milwaukee. Because my first professional show was like in 97.
97.
Yeah, and I still have, and what's funny is I still have a copy of my paycheck. The first check I got.
You do?
Because I was just like, oh my God, I got paid to do this. I gotta make a copy of this and hold on to it. Yeah, so that's how I remember. It's like, 97. Yeah, there it is.
It is sort of silly getting that check, isn't it?
Yeah,
you're like, wow, I got a check for just having so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So before we get to your Seattle, though, that you started, I want to talk about one more thing that stands out to me with you playing is your gibberish.
I love gibberish.
Phenomenal.
Oh, man.
And the only other person I did this with was Holly Ignatowski, because I love her gibberish, too. but my son, Nelson, always asks us questions about comedy sports. He did comedy sports kids camp.
Oh, really? Cool.
For a couple summers. And when I started playing again... He'd say, now, Mommy, do you know how to play What Are You Doing? I'm like, yeah, I think I got that, honey. I'm good.
Yeah.
If you get nervous, Mommy, just find me in the crowd and I'll help you. Yeah, I'm like, okay, sweetheart, thank you. But he'll ask us questions about sports all the time.
Yeah.
And one of the questions is, who's good at gibberish? Uh-huh. And Dave and I always respond right away with Dave Bogan. Every time. So what if I wrote something down? Like a six things thing.
A six things, okay.
Right? And six things.
Oh, well, four things we play now.
Right, okay.
We used to play six things, but
anyways. But if I wrote down something and you did the gibberish for me.
Okay.
And the crowd will have no idea what we're talking about, but it'll be fun to hear you gibberish. So I'll not say what it is until the very end.
Okay.
And we'll see.
This will be an interesting experiment here. All right.
We'll see if our crowd can pick up. All right. So I wrote down a six things activity, or four things, or five things activity.
Okay.
And I want you to gibberish it for the crowd.
Oh, my God. All right. Let's see if they can figure this out. All right. Chibika balegibichi. Hey, so mahabala bakabachi. Hey, oh, so mahala kabachi de kibichi. Oh, so bakabachi. Oh, tipper tipper laker turbachi de hardy de. Ho, kabache. Go, go. Kibichi bikidi. Oh, so balahaba kibichi biki. Oh, sibiki. Oh, nabachaba kibichi. Ping da ba, king da ba, ding da bangadi. Ah, siwalaba kibachi. Ping, 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 ping. Polygrip so balahaba kibichi de kibiki. Oh, so mahabala. Oh, bala kibichi bikidi. Ah, somebody give me team half a shiver of a cap to happy old speller, but up, but you love hanger, head up, but you're here, but key. Zoma Habaka, Ratch of Lavity, come off labor, TB Keat. Oh, Zobaga, Zahaman of a Kibichi, Yabba Ratch of an offer rabbit, he be saying, oh, who's a bit of a diga. A cheap today, put it there. Oh, so poor hell, hot tip, but a cheap guy. Hey, I'm sure they figured that out.
Well, I should have them email me at thecomedysportspodcast@gmail.com if they figured it out. That was fantastic. Bogan was bowling, and the pins were a Christmas tree. The ball was a cell phone, and he was bowling against the Beatles. That was fantastic.
God.
So this is why we tell our son that you were the best at gibberish.
Man, thank you. Yeah.
You created a whole language.
Yeah, I think I was a natural at gibberish because... This is going to sound weird, but me and a couple of my friends, when I was younger, maybe freshman or sophomore in high school.
Okay.
My fellow Monty Python fan friends.
We
created this language that was called Schnurgnag.
Schnurgnag.
And what the idea was is we tried to just come up with phrases and statements that were a mix of made-up words and real words, and the goal was to try to say something that makes absolutely no sense.
Really?
So for example, it would be like, a fly in my contemplal is a fur nine. Yep. The goal is just try to not make any sense whatsoever.
So you've been practicing this since high school.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the reason I think, I'm so good at gibberish is because, we played that game all the time. Yeah. We just found it so funny to try to say things that made no sense. That's... and just make up words. And
so how do you teach it then? You've taught plenty. How do you teach gibberish? Do you explain that?
You know what? Whenever I teach it, I try to explain to the students, like, the easy gibberish most people do is like shabada shaba 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 haba shaba haba, and I explain to them, well, the reason you're doing it like that is because that's the easiest sounds for your mouth to make. It's easy to go blah and have all your gibberish words end with an A. So whenever I teach it, I always try to explain to them, hit the hard consonants and use as many different sounds as you can.
Okay.
And I explain to them also, like, just think of like Klingon. The Klingon language is like a great gibberish, like zook makti for la perturang glank paturti pa. And I just say,
I wish people could see your face right now doing that. Your eyebrows made movements I didn't know were humanly possible.
Geeka blacko trufreaker Michele Palk. But that's how I teach them to make those hard sounds. And like even our pro players, they still struggle with that.
Well, it's tough. I have to tell you, whenever I have to do gibberish, mm-hmm. I envision you in my head. I honestly do. I think of you and I try to listen and hear how you do it. And you're right. You hit the consonants.
Yeah. It's just hitting those hard sounds and just try to make as many different noises with your mouth as you can. Yeah. And
fantastic.
Make it sound like a real language. Yeah. That's the fun of it. Yeah. No doubt.
Have you heard from audience members before saying you guys are speaking in code? You've made up a language?
I haven't had too many people come up and be like, you're cheating somehow. Yeah. But the game Four Things, though, it is the game just wows audiences all the time. Like when we do it in Seattle, we make sure to play it in every show.
Really?
We always play. Yeah. We always play like a Four Things.
Okay.
Even though it was Six Things initially, yeah. I actually, like, I don't know if I'm bragging here, but I was the one that switched it to Four Things in Milwaukee.
Oh, listen to you, Dave Mogan, the pro. Because I was just
like, six things. That's too long.
It is long.
Let's just do Four Things.
Well, it was five. It was a team game.
Yeah, that's right.
And then it was six.
Yep, that's right.
So let's get to Seattle. So what year did you and Alex went together? Tell me about how this happened.
Well, he first moved out there about, like, what was it, about 8 years ago? Something like that. And he initially wanted me to come out there with him. But at that time, I couldn't because my mom was having health issues.
Right.
I was in a relationship and stuff. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't make the move. So he went out there ahead of me.
Yeah.
And then after my mom passed, my dad started having health issues too. So we got him into assisted living. Mm-hmm. And then the relationship that I had ended.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of like in this position, like about like, what was it, about 5.5, 6 years ago, where I'm like, you know what? I could do this right now. My dad's taken care of. Mom's gone. I don't have any kids that I know of.
I know of. Again, it's the Comedy Sports Podcast at gmail.com.
just the stars aligned. And I called up Alex and I was just like, hey, you still want me to come out there?
Yeah.
And he's just like, hell yeah.
Okay.
And he made me instantly like the roadshow manager and educational director.
Okay. Now, had it already been going on a little bit out there? Like, he already started a group of people working there?
Yeah. He had been out. When I said I was going to come out there, he had been out there like about 2 years, maybe.
Okay.
Something like that. And,
okay.
I went out and reffed their very first match.
You did?
Yeah, he flew me out.
Okay.
Because he wanted me to be the ref for their very first show ever.
Yeah.
So, like, even back then, like, Seattle was, like, my adopted comedy sports there. I was just like, yeah, this is my stepchild comedy sports or whatever. So I didn't have any idea that I was going to be moving out there, but
it felt good.
It felt good. Yeah. I was just like, I can't wait to see this thing blow up that you're creating. So that was awesome to be able to ref the very first match.
So when you got out there and you started doing the road shows, had he already been booking shows or did you kind of come in and just,
He really didn't have much of a roadshow business at all going on.
Well, it's
at that
tough
point.
Just being the only one.
Yeah, because he's like running everything, and especially like building an improv. Like a troupe from like the ground up.
Right.
Yeah,
how did he get people? Tell me about just the start of Seattle.
Yeah, I think what he did is he just started teaching improv classes.
Okay.
In the style of Comedy Sports.
Yeah.
And that's where he started pulling people.
Okay.
And also there are other people in the improv community that he'd met by doing just, kind of long form stuff here and there.
Okay.
And he met those people and he's just like, yeah, you're funny. You want to learn how to do Comedy Sports?
Yeah.
So it was kind of a mix of like people he taught in classes and also people that he had been doing just like little sets with here and there throughout the Seattle area.
So are there other improv groups out there?
Yeah. Okay. We're one of the three big ones.
Oh, okay. What are the other two? Or
so
should we not even?
One would be Unexpected Productions.
Okay.
And they've been around probably like about 40 years, and they do theater sports.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they're one of the places. They're like this. I think they're the second place that did theater sports.
Yes, Dick talked about being out in Seattle.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So there's that. There's Unexpected Productions, and then there's another place called Jet City.
Okay.
Where they do short form improv, not comedy sports or theater sports, but they have their own kind of short form stuff, and then they also do like themed long form.
Okay.
Stuff like they did something called Claim of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
Where it's just basically like they improvise like a scene from like Game of Thrones,
right?
But it's a different characters and stuff like that they get from the audience to base it on. But
well, so how many people do you have in your group now, in your troupe out in Seattle?
We got about, I'm gonna say about 30 something people now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have your own space?
We rent a theater space in Fremont.
Okay.
Really, really nice venue. It's got seats 70.
Okay.
And then we also have a smaller theater in the same space that seats 30. That's kind of like our black box theater.
Yeah.
So we use the main theater for Comedy Sports and a variety of other shows that we do, and then the smaller one is kind of like for local improv groups that are looking for a place to perform and for their family and friends and stuff.
Sure.
So we usually have like multiple shows going on at the same time, like on Friday and Saturday nights.
And you're doing Friday and Saturday nights?
Yeah. We'll do Comedy Sports at 8 o'clock, and then at 10 o'clock we always do some sort of long form show.
Okay.
Yeah. So we don't do 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock Comedy Sports.
Okay.
And usually our 10 o'clock shows are more like our Mondo style.
Yeah. Sure.
Like we have one called Dubious Advice, where...
Tell me about that.
Well, what we do is we have like three what we call experts.
Okay.
And the audience gets to ask questions of like sincere advice that they want.
Yeah.
But the deal is the people that are on the panel are inebriated in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, no. Okay.
And they have to give this advice in that state. And then what we do is we take all the stuff that is said, and we act out scenarios using that advice in different ways.
Okay.
So like that's one of our shows. We have another show called Full Disclosure, where we will have a special guest that comes in, and like we give them a word, and they tell a true life story that word inspires, and then we act out like an Armando set off of that.
That's great. So you guys were doing Comedy Sports, and then did you decide together, like, let's just start some other stuff, or did it just sort of happen naturally? You had an idea, or how does this?
When I first got out there, we were doing like 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock matches.
Oh, you were.
But then Alex and I kind of just talked about it, and we're like, why don't we get a variety of other stuff in there instead?
Yeah, I think that's great.
So then we decided, let's just make the 8 o'clock, that's Comedy Sports, and then 10 o'clock we do a different monthly show.
Okay.
Every week.
And has this caught on? Does Seattle love Comedy Sports now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You got regulars, you think, in your crowd?
Oh, yeah. We got super fans. Yeah, it's it's very, yeah. What's been really cool for me to see is, like, I got to see Comedy Sports grow here in Milwaukee, and I'm seeing the same kind of momentum and things happening in Seattle now, too, where, like, people constantly come up to us and tell us about how fun and engaging our shows are in comparison to many of the other shows that they see out there.
Okay.
Because, Jet City and Unexpected Productions, they got great stuff.
Oh, I'm sure,
Awesomely talented cast and everything like that. But they specify more in long format kind of improv.
Okay.
And it's more artistic if you will. But people come to us and they're like, wow, you guys are just so fun. It's so fast and like, you know,
yeah.
and up tempo and
so
everything.
So it's the format.
Like
they're enjoying that format. Yeah,
they're liking the format, yeah. but also, you know, the players that we look for too.
What's the matter with you?
The players, when we cast players, we're always looking for people that are not only funny,
right.
but just fun people, mm-hmm. where you see them performing from a place of joy,
yeah.
where they're enjoying themselves, and that's contagious. And I think
What you think you brought to it? Like, what did you bring from Milwaukee to Seattle that you really wanted to instill in your new players?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
Is we want our players to, you know, to be genuinely funny people, but also like when you watch them, you're like, wow, that person's just cool.
And they're having
fun. They're just fun. They're
yeah.
enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
And when I teach my classes, I tell my students that. I'm like, you got to have fun.
Yeah.
Don't work so hard. If you're working hard, that's not fun for people to watch. The audience wants to see you enjoying yourself. So enjoy yourself. Have fun while you're doing it because that's contagious.
Yeah.
You know, if you're having fun, they're having fun. Even like when you're doing a scene and like it doesn't go the way you're going or, you know, you trip up or something like that. If you're having fun doing it, that's just as entertaining as anything else.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I think that's kind of what sets us apart. Yeah. In Seattle now, in the Seattle community, is like people see our performers just truly enjoying themselves,
yes,
and not working so hard to like be this perfect improviser. It's like, no, we're rough around the edges, but we're fun people, and people respond to that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. What do you think's different from you played Milwaukee? You said almost about 20 years. What's different from playing in Milwaukee and now playing in Seattle?
Let me see. Well, Seattle. I don't know if I sense any real difference. I will say this: the crowds are a lot more sober
in Seattle
really? Than Milwaukee. Yeah,
Really?
I typically do not have to deal with any drunk people whatsoever.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. There may be other states of mind.
Maybe
since it's legal out there.
Legal.
But yeah. Other than that, the comedy sports product like really works well out there.
Yeah.
Because Seattle's got a reputation of being everyone's very cool and very hip.
Yeah.
There's something called the Seattle Freeze, which is like when someone moves out to Seattle, it's really hard to make connections because people are kind of like earbuds in, I don't want to talk to you kind of attitude, you know, just very hip, cool. Ooh, I'm drinking my coffee. Yeah. So there's definitely that vibe.
Okay.
And it's a younger person city too.
Okay.
Like most people are like 15, 20 years younger than me that I see
really?
On a daily basis. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think because our comedy sports style is so much taken from the attitude of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That people find that refreshing. They're like, wow, whoa, these guys aren't trying to be cool and hip or whatever. They're just being
They're
fun.
They're just having fun. They're
crazy.
So
people love that, yeah.
And now, is it interesting being there at the beginning, like, you know, creating this company and this group and forming this at the start?
Yeah, no doubt. And we are constantly growing in popularity, especially like our workshops.
Yeah, so you said you're in charge of education too.
Yeah, yeah. I write all the classes and
I
teach most of them. I got other people that I've trained to teach now too,
yeah.
so that's growing. But yeah, when I first went out there, like classes, you know, were typically like maybe like 5-6 people
okay.
like in a one-on-one.
And now?
Now they're selling out. And
oh, that's
we're
great.
Up to 16. I had to cap it at 16.
Like okay.
I initially had them at 20 people
that's
and they
a
were
lot.
Still selling out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just to teach that many people in 2 hours is too tough.
Right.
But like, for example, now going from that to now in January, I've got 3 one-on-one classes, one that's meeting Tuesday nights, one that meets on Thursday nights, and one that I've added for Saturday afternoons.
Okay.
And last year, all 3 of them sold out.
That's
this
amazing.
This year, 2 more, they're sold out. And the third one, the Saturday afternoon one, is about to sell out too.
Now, is this word of mouth? You got social media? How are you promoting?
Yeah. I mean, there's some social media, but honestly, word of mouth.
Yeah.
People, like, people that take our classes, they continue to tell me the same thing. Like, you guys make it so much fun. You guys are so fun when you do this stuff.
That's great.
Yeah, when they try to compare like to other classes that they take, and they're like, "You guys are just fun. This is awesome."
That's wonderful.
And that momentum,
with
the success of the classes, is also affecting all sorts of other things in terms of business and people bringing friends down and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people love the way we do it out there.
Oh, and I don't think Seattle knows how lucky they are to have you, Dave.
Oh,
you
shucks.
Are a gem. We lost a great guy when you moved out there, but we're going to play a couple games before we stop here, before we end. I've got a bunch of cards here in front of you.
All right.
And you're going to pull out two papers, and they're all different comedy sports games.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me which game you would prefer to play in a show.
Okay.
And why? Well, tell me about the games.
All right.
What do you
so
pick
I'm pulling
here?
Two here?
Well, just pick two, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm picking two.
All right.
Let's see. Oh, wow. Emotional Symphony and Radio.
Oh!
Wow.
Those are some fun games. Tell me about those. You play those out there?
No. Radio's. I would like Emotional Symphony. Honestly, I love that game, Emotional Symphony.
Yeah.
But no one wants to play it because it's such a like a 101 kind of game.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you guys do music games out there?
Mostly rapping.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have a keyboardist.
Right.
So yeah, our players are they're somewhat trained in singing, but that's never been my strength or Alex's strength.
Yeah.
Quite honest, because yeah, Milwaukee was kind of the same way too.
Like, yeah, we haven't taken off of music. Some cities though, that's like their thing. They are just musical all the time, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I think the majority of cities are like really into like singing everything.
I know.
Like,
whenever
wow.
we'd see them at championship, I'd be like, whoa, wait, why are they singing? What are they doing?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's awesome.
Uh-huh. So yeah, what we do is we do a lot of rap. A lot of rapping games. So we'll play to do rap.
Beastie Rap. Okay.
And then the game that we created in our rec league here, What You Got. Yeah. People love that game.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
When I
tell people, like, again, I'm going to pat myself on the back.
Go for it.
I helped make that game.
There you go.
Yeah, I did.
Which one? Beastie Rap?
What You Got.
Oh, What You Got.
What You Got is the one, yeah, that we made, just the dancing game. But yeah, our players like to do the rapping games.
Okay.
But amongst these two, Emotional Symphony and Radio, I'd probably play Radio. We play that from time to time.
Do you?
Yeah, every once in a while.
So explain Radio to my listeners here.
Well, Radio is a game where all the players stand in a line, and we get a suggestion of what type of radio station for each person. And then we'll usually get like a one word topic or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the lights come down and the ref sits in front with a flashlight. And anytime the ref puts a flashlight on someone's face, they got to broadcast their station.
Right.
And the ref just constantly moves back and forth between the players. And then the audience gets to judge which team they thought was the most fun.
Do you ref mostly out there or do you play too?
I ref half, play half now.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been trying to train a lot of other people to ref too. Yeah.
Okay.
Most people are frankly intimidated by reffing.
Because you're so amazing.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, we have been getting actually some more and more players that are starting to be like, hey, you know what? I want to try this reffing thing. So we're training more and more people.
Okay, that's good.
Sometimes it depends on how busy we are, whether I'm playing or reffing or whatever. But sometimes I'm kind of slowly trying to step away a little bit, not in terms of like, all right, I'm going to stop performing.
Yeah.
But what I am trying to do is like, all right, well, let's get other people to perform and do stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll focus more on the business end of like, all right, getting those road shows out.
Sure.
And, you know, putting together the classes and figuring out other ways we can sell improv to make money.
Yeah.
Well,
you're doing it. You're out there and you're doing it. I think it's great.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's 7 days a week.
Oh my God.
Constantly, nonstop, but I'm living the dream.
All right, I got one more. Do you need to put your readers on here?
Oh, yeah. I got my readers here.
You can pick any one of these. It's a would you rather. You can pick any of the... There's a bunch of different colors on there. Just pick one.
Okay.
We're going to get to know you a little bit more, Bogan. Would you rather?
All right. Let's see. I'm going to go with the random one. All right. Would you rather be forced into witness protection, but at least be safe, or live free, but in constant fear of being harmed?
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I would say, I think I want to live free.
You're living free?
Yeah, I want to live free. Just, being forced into witness protection, I don't know, it just feels like that's very limiting. I'll handle what it comes across.
You are a Marine, Bogan.
That's right. I can defend myself.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your trip back home.
Thank you.
To do this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope someday to work my way out to Seattle. My best friend has lived there forever, and I'm the worst best friend. I've never been to visit, so I got to get out there. And when I do, I want to do a show with you.
Definitely. Come on. Yeah, visit. Yeah, I constantly tell Milwaukee players, come on out here and visit me. We're doing stuff. I want people to see this great thing that we created that was based on everything I learned here in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Well, Seattle's lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Dave Bogan, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is produced and engineered by Kyle Hannikin. Our announcer is PJ Rockwell. Feel free to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Comments and inquiries can be sent to thecomedysportspodcast@gmail.com. Created and hosted by me, Christine Rolo Capriolo. Thanks for listening.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is an independent production made by CSC Players. The views and opinions expressed by the podcast host and any guests are their own and do not represent the views and opinions of any CSE location or CSE worldwide. Vocabulary used by the host and guests is not necessarily representative of the CSE brand.